Well, Jennifer Holliday, the original dream girl, has known lots of good times and some rough ones, too. She became a star on Broadway in the production of Dreamgirls with a showstopper of a song, And I Am Telling You I'm Not Going. But in the years since, she battled obesity and depression, and there's an ongoing struggle with multiple sclerosis that brings her to town tomorrow. For Jennifer Holliday fans, the good news this year is she's out with a new album of songs, her first disc of new material in more than two decades. The new disc is titled The Song Is You. Well, this is Jennifer Holliday on the title track from her album, The Song Is You.
I hear music when I look at you. A beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew. Down deep in my heart, I hear it play. I feel it start, then melt away. I hear music when I touch your hand. A beautiful melody from some enchanted land. Down deep in my heart, I hear it say, is this the day?
Well, you are back, girl.
Thank you.
Welcome to Kansas City. So nice to have you here in our studios.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I know you get asked this a lot, but 22 years between albums of, you know, with new material. What happened? Where you been?
Well,
life
just happens.
Yeah.
Life just happens. My last one was in 1991 for Arista Records. It was called I'm on Your Side, and it did do pretty well, but things kind of went downhill from there. I just didn't have opportunities to work because the music industry itself had changed so much. The sound of R&B music was no longer R&B, and I just could not ever figure out when to get back in. And so these reality shows, American Idol and The Voice and all of these other shows, these young people have now brought me into the millennium and have made me relevant again. So
they did that how?
Well, by associating that if you sing a Jennifer Holliday song, you might very well win. So to me,
a little word for the wise here, right?
Listen, so for me, I said, well, if they can sing a Jennifer Holliday song and win, maybe Jennifer Holliday could sing a Jennifer Holliday song and win.
Yeah.
And I just thought with the new social media and the opportunity for you to go straight to the public, because also, as you know, record labels are pretty much no longer existence. There's only a few major ones left. So you're not going to really get signed unless you're young and they can take everything. You know,
for people our age, and I'm putting us together here because we're joined at the hip.
We are together.
Just so we're together on that. But this had to have been really disorienting for you. I mean, to start off the way you did and then hit the 90s and the world is sort of turning upside down, that'd be hard for an entertainer like yourself, right?
Yeah. And when you have a voice like mine, a big voice, and you try to figure out, you know, where do you go? And it was just really hard, really very, very hard. So when I started kind of saying, okay, these young people have made me relevant again, how can I maybe just step forth? Maybe this is the time. So this is on my own label. It's independent. And I just thought with social media and stuff that maybe I would have a chance. And so fortunately, it has given me a chance, and I'm very grateful.
Jennifer Holliday is our guest. You know, you mentioned the big voice.
Yes.
Were you born with that, or did you have to work on it over the years?
Well, I may have been born with it, but what happened was I was a late singer, so I didn't start singing until I was 13. So I was born and raised in Houston, Texas, down south, and a little tiny town, Tinney Heart, Texas, my grandparents. And so I had a lot of ear, nose, throat problems, and So down south, it's taboo to have anything operated on. So every time it was time to get my tonsils out, you know, they would tell my mother, don't get that baby. You know, don't you take nothing from that baby, right? So my mother, one time she had to get me from school. I could not breathe. My tonsils had swollen. So she said, listen, I'm going to get these tonsils out. Don't tell your grandmother anything. We're going to put you in the hospital, whatever. Took out the tonsils, and there was this voice.
Wow.
I mean, I was like, I don't know. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
There was this voice. So if that hadn't happened, maybe the voice wouldn't have come?
I don't think so, because I was going to go do something else. I could sing, but not like I sing now. So from 13 to now, my voice has been this same power, this same. It's better now because I have more control of it. I'm not just screaming at everyone. But there was this voice. So had I never got my tonsils removed, had my mother ever defied taboo with my grandparents, I think I would not have been singing.
So are you saying to me that if I have my tonsils
removed, I'm not saying
I can sing
that,
like Jennifer Holliday? Yes, you are. That's what I took from that.
Steve, I ain't saying that. Don't try to put me in that. I'm not trying to put me in that. I'm just saying that that's my story. So I was a late singer. You know.
Well, do you remember a moment after you had the tonsils out when you noticed this change? And was there a moment you were singing in front of somebody or testing your voice again and you were like, holy smokes, where did this come from?
Well, my mother sang in the choir, so I would go to choir rehearsal with her and sit out in the pews, do my homework and everything like that while they were doing it. So I just started like singing with them, just kind of like whatever. And they stopped. The church choir director said, who's that singing? And they were like, Jennifer, is that you? I said, is that me? That was like, and they were like, come on up here. The only problem with that was that they put me in the adult choir. So it was like, listen,
I
can't be with my buddies. I got to sing with you all. But I did know, I don't know if you're kind of familiar with it, but down south they call it an old soul, that my voice was bigger than my age, because when I sang, people did cry and it did touch them, and I was confused at what I had. Not frightened, but just confused.
Confused at, why, Jennifer?
Because I kept saying, why are they crying? I thought I was doing something wrong, but my mother was like, oh, you're touching them and you're making them feel something inside. And I said, well, I'm, you know, it's like, but the problem, like I said, I had to sing in the adult choir, so they were making me lead songs. And so from an early age, you know, to have a voice that you don't know. And I had no desire to be an entertainer or music. I was, like I said, having throat problems and things like that. I didn't try to sing.
Yeah.
So I was also smart in school. So I wanted to really become a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
And maybe a judge, you know, and that was what I was going to do.
When did you begin to understand that what your voice was a gift, and that you could appreciate what you had and understand the power of that gift?
Probably not until I got discovered. I was singing in the church choir in Houston, Texas, a church called Pleasant Grove Baptist Church. And a young man by the name of Jamie Patterson was touring with a Broadway show called A Chorus Line. He came to visit the church with a friend of his. He heard me singing. He said, you have a voice that should be on Broadway. So about 3 months later, he called me, told me about this show. It was called Your Arms Too Short to Box with God. I auditioned. I got hired that day. And then when we opened in Hartford, Connecticut, and people I didn't know, not my mother's friends, not our neighbors or anything like that, gave me a standing ovation, that was the first time I ever realized that I had something that was unique and appreciated by a lot of people. That was that moment, and I was 18 at that time.
The original Dream Girl, Jennifer Holliday, is our guest. She'll be the keynote speaker at 11 Wednesday morning for the MS Society's On the Move Luncheon at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Tickets for On the Move are available at www.msmidamerica.org or by calling 913-432-3926. You can also just get tickets at the door. That's tomorrow at 11 at the Kauffman Center. You know, all this stuff, Jennifer, that you went through, I mean, the weight gain and the depression, To what extent did all that come about because of all the success you had in Dreamgirls way back in the early 1980s?
Well, I would think it was being so young.
Sure.
You know, I think that, you know, I was discovered at 17. My first show, Yoram Shishorta Baksa, got at 18. I was already on Broadway when they saw me for Dreamgirls. So therefore, I did worked on Dreamgirls in the daytime, did Box of God at night.
Wow.
And so from a very early age in terms of the stress or not understanding, again, no time, you know, I call it arrested development because I did not ever have a chance to really grow up. And I always tell people now, parents, when they ask me what they should do for their children, I said, let them go to college. Can you do that? So that some man can carry your girl's book or somebody, so they can have some remembrance of what life is really like before, if they hit become stardom. Because if you have no memory of it, it becomes very hard, you know, to put your life in a different perspective.
So if you had to do it over again, you might have slowed it down a little bit.
If I had my intention was to have gone to college. I was very smart in school. I graduated a year early. I didn't even go to the 12th grade. I graduated in 11. I was fourth in the state of Texas, and number two, you know, in Houston in terms of where I was. So I should have gone to college first, just to have a touch of what life was about.
Yeah.
And I think that that's my biggest regret. To this day, and even though I have an honorary doctorate from Berklee College of Music, I still wish that I would have gone, you know.
You know, what's your sense of why the public reacted so strongly, so positively to your big hit from Dreamgirls, and I'm not telling you, and I am telling you I'm not going? I mean, what was it about that song that connected the way that it did?
Well, I think back early in the 80s, and like I said, I'm very fortunate that a song that would be three decades. It was 32 years ago when we opened on Broadway in 1981, December 1981. And so therefore, people didn't have, you know, cameras and cell phones or YouTube or Twitter or anything. So I had to be in their hearts and mind. But I think it spoke to even what the problem is now, is that there is a great concern about our life with love and our life with relationship, and why is it so difficult in a world where we have everything that's 24/7 that we can't make our marriages work? That we can't. So I think that a lot of people, it touched whatever pain they were going through in life, you know, and a lot of college students, David Kelly, who I worked for on Ally McBeal, he used to come and buy us a $10 standing room only ticket while he was working. He said the music helped him get through his hard law class because he's actually a real lawyer. That's why he writes all those great shows. And so I think that it just spoke to whatever any pain person was going through, they would have permission to cry, even a man. Mm-hmm. I'm crying because that character is really getting to me. You know what I'm saying? He don't have to say what's going on. He was like, that character, that Effie, she doing, oh, she's making me cry, you know. But he may have some other pain. A lot of people have come to me and said that that song saved their marriages. Now, it saved none of my marriages, but it saved a lot of people's marriages, you know, and a lot of children born to that song. So it has its own meaning, but I think it speaks to the pain of where that person is for the person.
Let's listen to this song,
All
Jennifer
right.
Holliday, and I'm telling you, I'm not going.
I'm not.
You ever get tired of that song?
I'm very happy to say that no. I made peace with the song very early on.
Peace in what sense?
That a lot of entertainers have songs that they hate to sing and have to sing it. So either you can make a choice to just pull it out of your repertoire and do something else. So I didn't have to do it. I just went ahead and made peace with it because, like I said, each person who hears the song, it means something totally different to each of them.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to rob them of that. Now, fortunately, I can still sing the song just like I sang it 32 years ago, maybe better. And so, therefore, I don't have a problem with it. And again, as I told you, I was only at that particular point when I started working on Dreamgirls, only 19. And when we opened on Broadway, only 21. So I really, the song was a great song to kind of grow older with, because with each romance and with each failed marriage or each even just different places in life, it took on a different meaning for even myself.
Again, our guest is the great Jennifer Holliday. I mean, these days, Jennifer, there's another issue on your plate, which is MS. And in fact, you're here in Kansas City tomorrow to tell your story as an individual living with MS, you know, this disabling disease of the central nervous system. You'll be the keynote speaker for the MS Society's On the Move luncheon at the Kauffman Center. When were you diagnosed, and how does your MS affect you today?
Well, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis 17 years ago. And I have been both blind and paralyzed.
As a result?
As a result of it, yes.
And today you're money?
No.
Okay.
No. The illness...
Look like money.
Thank you so much. Look like money. The illness itself is an autoimmune illness. Unfortunately, they really still don't know a lot about this illness. And pretty much no group of people experience the same symptoms or the same outcome. I probably could have remained paralyzed, but it took them a long time to give the final diagnosis that it was indeed MS and not another autoimmune illness. And they did that through a spinal tap and some other conclusive issues.
And that's how you came back from it then, it sounds like. They were able to help.
Well, I had to help myself because back then they only had two medications. I could not take the medication. They were shots. And the shots would send your body into almost a low-grade fever kind of thing. You would have a kind of fever and a flu kind of feel. I said, well, I'm a singer. And I've got a head, and I said, well, we think you should retire. And I said, I think you should mind your business, you know. So, you know, you've already made the diagnosis. I'm the only one that could give the prognosis, which is I'll find out what I need to do. So I did my own homework, my own research of alternative medicine, alternative health. I changed my health completely, my diet completely. Even my lifestyle now, I just recently moved to Atlanta solely because of my illness so that I could manage my stress, which is a very high factor of having us bring on flare-ups and attacks. So I had to manage that. And I was last blind in 2007. It struck the optic nerve. They were able to save the optic nerve, but wasn't sure if I would regain my sight. And so I think the most thing for me has been my mind and my attitude toward the illness. I think that we can fight anything if we believe that we have hope, even if a doctor or anyone else says that we don't. I think that we also just have to really believe so much. And I know that there's no cure for this illness. So how do I cope and do the things that I need to do? You know, like they said, moving on. How do you do that?
Yeah.
You know, get on the move with the illness. Fatigue is a part of the illness, so I get tired very quickly. And can you imagine that after doing, you know, a 2-hour concert and whatever? But you learn more so that it's our attitude toward every devastating situation, toward every illness, that will help us pull ourselves through. So, yes, I look like money, but I suffer with pain just like everyone else. Mm-hmm. I have inflammation. I have hard times sometimes just moving. So each day with this illness, because they still don't know what it is, I can wake up and sometimes I just have to lay down because I can't move my – I get what they call stuck. We get frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have to either go to the hospital and let them – you know, put us on IVs and get unstruck. So it's quite a bit. It's quite a bit.
And I should point out that tomorrow, besides giving the keynote, you're going to be singing as well.
I'm going to be singing.
You're going to let it rip.
I'm going to let it rip. I don't do a lot of speaking engagements, but when I first started speaking several, many years ago, not about MS, but just doing speaking engagements to women, to large women, our audiences, I would speak, but I was like, okay, I had a Japanese group that I had to sing for of women. And I said, how are they going to know what I'm singing? So what I'm speaking about. So I sang, and then they came up to me and they said, Jennifer, you, they call you son. Jennifer Holliday, son, you speak a sing. I said, that's right, speak a sing. I said, that's what I'm going to do from now on. Because if the words don't get you, I definitely know a song that can get you.
Well, again, Jennifer Holliday speaks at a luncheon tomorrow at the Kauffman Center. It's for the MS Society's On the Move luncheon. Tickets, 913-432-3926, or just show up at the door. And boy, what a pleasure to have you here. So good to see you, and so glad to see you're doing so well,
thank
too.
Thank you. Thank you so much,
Jennifer,
for having me.
You bet.
Okay.
You can find out more information about our broadcast. Just go to kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the show, KCK Mayor Mark Holland joins us. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. A special shout-out today to my sister, the Reverend Lisa Kraske-Cressman, for her help with today's show. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.
If no one understands you...